Srimad Bhagavatam 6th Canto, Chapter 9, The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura, Text 36. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, all contradictions can be reconciled in you. O Lord, since you are the Supreme Person, the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities, the Supreme Controller, your unlimited glories are inconceivable to the conditioned souls. Many modern theologians argue about right and wrong without knowing what is actually right. Their arguments are always false and their judgments inconclusive because they have no authorized evidence with which to gain knowledge of you. Because their minds are agitated by scriptures containing false conclusions, they are unable to understand the truth concerning you. Furthermore, because of polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusion, their theories are incapable of revealing you, who are transcendental to their material conceptions. You are one without a second, and therefore in you, contradictions like doing and not doing, happiness and distress, are not contradictory. Your potency is so great that it can do and undo anything as you like. With the help of that potency, what is impossible for you? Since there is no duality in your constitutional position, you can do everything by the influence of your energy. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being self-sufficient, is full of transcendental bliss, Atmarama. He enjoys bliss in two ways, when he appears happy and when he appears distressed. Distinctions and contradictions are impossible in him, because only from him have they emanated. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all knowledge, all potency, all strength, opulence, and influence. There is no limit to his powers, since he is full in all transcendental attributes. Nothing abominable from the material world can exist in him. He is transcendental and spiritual, and therefore conceptions of material happiness and distress do not apply to him. We should not be astonished to find contradictions in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, there are no contradictions. That is the meaning of his being supreme. Because he is all-powerful, he is not subject to the conditioned soul's arguments regarding his existence or non-existence. He is pleased to protect his devotees by killing their enemies. He enjoys both the killing and the protecting. Such freedom from duality applies not only to the Lord, but also to his devotees. In Vrindavan, the damsels of Brajabhumi enjoy transcendental bliss in the company of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And they feel the same transcendental bliss in separation when Krishna and Balaram leave Vrindavan for Mathura. There is no question of material pains or pleasures for either the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his pure devotees, although they are sometimes superficially said to be distressed or happy. One who is Atmarama is blissful in both ways. Non-devotees cannot understand the contradictions present in the Supreme Lord or his devotees. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Bhukyamam abhijanati. The transcendental pastimes can be understood through devotional service. To non-devotees, they are inconceivable. Achincha kavaye bhava ye tamstarkena yojaya. The Supreme Lord and his form, name, pastimes, and paraphernalia are inconceivable to non-devotees. And one should not try to understand such realities simply by logical arguments. They will not bring one to the right conclusion about the absolute truth. Om Yanachamanandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshupanitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guru Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedanta Srivastava Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. The demigods are offering prayers to the appearance of of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This chapter of Bhagavatam describes that first the Lord appeared in their hearts and then he appeared before them. Sometimes people who feel theistically inclined, they have different conceptions. Where is the Supreme Personality of God? According to usual Western religious theology, where is God? People will point above. A prevalent conception of so-called religions from India is that if you ask them, where is God? And they point within. Either they're saying he's within me or he is me. But Srimad Bhagavatam presents the most profound and deepest understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth. That the Supreme is both within and without. And he is you as the jiva at the same time he is not you. He is you as the jiva in terms of your being his part. So in one sense you can say the part is the whole because the part and the whole are of the same quality. But obviously when you're talking about quantity, there's a huge difference. Whether the Supreme Personality of Godhead is within or without. Even sometimes devotees wonder about that. Although that wondering of the devotees is part of their ecstatic love for Krishna. Queen Kunti was like that in the first canto of Bhagavatam. She had just witnessed how the Supreme Lord appeared within the womb of Uttara and saved Prichit Maharaj from being burned by the Brahmastra weapon sent by Ashvatthama. So she had just witnessed that. Yet again, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead right before her as she's offering prayers. So she's trying to cope with this transcendental phenomenon. Yes, she knows that everything comes from Krishna. Yet at the same time, there he is, standing before her as her nephew. So Kunti Devi has to deal with all these contradictions. And meanwhile, what is she saying about herself in pure Vaishnava humility? And what she says, sometimes persons who don't understand, they become offended. She says, how can I understand you? I'm just an unintelligent woman. The greatest mental speculators and metaphysical scholars, they can't understand you. What to speak of me, a simple woman? Meanwhile, who is Kunti Devi and what is she doing? She's standing right before the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm so unintelligent. What do I know? Meanwhile, she's talking right to Krishna. So sometimes people get offended. Ooh, she's demeaning the gender. She's speaking down about herself. Where's her self-esteem? Contemporary psychologists are very much hung up on self-esteem, although no one knows what the self is. Perhaps our psychologist here in his mundane days would diagnose Kunti as having a problem with self-esteem. No comment.
How can I understand you? The greatest metaphysical gyanis don't understand you. What speak of me, an unintelligent woman?
Meanwhile, her prayers are glorious and super philosophical. This is bhakti humility. Everyone is mesmerized by Kunti Devi's prayers. The greatest Paramahansa, sannyasis, whatever, everyone recites Queen Kunti's prayers. Meanwhile, what do I know? I'm just an intelligent woman. This is bhakti humility. It's very difficult for those who are not a little bit purified to understand. So Kunti Devi picked right up on the contradictions of her situation as well as contradictions that others would see. For her, she was meditating over the phenomenon. Is he within or is he without? He's right before me.
yet he appeared within the Uttara and saved Prichit from the Brahmashtra. What is going on?
So in her first prayer to Krishna, she identifies some apparent contradictions. Namase purusham tvajam ishranam prakate param alaksham sabhutanam antapahirvavasthita. I'm offering my obeisances to you. You're the original person. You're not just a personality. Because Krishna could say, look, we all are personalities. Why are you glorifying me? You're a person, I'm a person, you're an individual, I'm an individual. But she says, Adi Purusha, Namaste Purusham, Twadyam. You're the original person. Everything comes from you. Isram Param. You're beyond the material nature. You control material nature and you're unaffected by it. Otherwise, Krishna could say, look, we all are here. Aren't we on the same level playing field? He says, no. Ishram Prakriti Param. The Prakriti, the material energy, is controlled by you. And you are beyond it. We may seem to be on the same level playing field, but actually that's not the case. You control the playing field. Indeed, the playing field emanates from you. Alaksham sarvabhutanam. Although the material energy comes from you and is dependent on you, you're invisible to the living entities who absorb the material energy. Just think, it would seem that because I'm absorbed in material energy, I'm expert at dealing with it. This is Western knowledge system. The more experience you have with the world, the more knowledge you get from the university, then the more you can understand the material energy. But actually you see the opposite is so. Understanding the material energy does not depend on experience, and it does not depend on mundane knowledge. If you truly want to understand the material energy, then you have to have Krishna's favor. You have to please the Adi Purusha, the original person. And then your intelligence starts to click. Otherwise, you're blinded, you're bewildered, and you go through so many lifetimes repeating the same mistake. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, mudha janmani janmani. Birth after birth you'd be a fool. Not just one time. You hate being a fool one time. If you've ever been cheated one time, oh, you never forget it. Feel so embarrassed to be cheated. But birth after birth to be cheated? Śrīmadī Goswāmī explains in the second canto of Bhāgavatam. Paśyānapi na paśyati. You are sufficiently experienced in terms of time you spent in the material world. You are sufficiently experienced in terms of been there, done that. But still you are not experienced. You see, but you do not see it. Because the material energy is blinding you, even though you've done enough time in your material sojourn. You still don't get the point. You can't see. You're bewildered. You're blinded. So please understand that this notion that the more I deal with the material energy, the more expert I become, the more experienced I become, the more knowledgeable I become. Forget it. Maybe you've had some experiences in your life in which you said, I'll never do that again. You will. That's the way of the world of samsara. The revolving wheel of birth and death. Kala chakra. Time is like a wheel. What comes up, goes down, and comes up again. So it's the same old same thing. They're different. Slight variations. But the variations are so slight, they're not even worth talking about. In other words, whether you pursue sense gratification in this situation or that situation, from the Shastric point of view, that's not a big difference. Now you might say, you're a young man. Well, being with Jane, I think, is much different than being with Jill. And similarly, Jill might think that being with John is quite a different experience than being with Sam. But from the Shastric point of view, the rasa, the flavor of the sense gratification, is the same. Not only is the flavor the same in this human form of life, but embarrassingly so, the flavor is the same as what the animals get. Is what Prahlad Maharaj points out. Seven canto Bhagavatam. Sukham Aindriyakam Daitya Deha Yogini Deha Savacha Lapite Dhamma Yatatukam Ayatnava. Prahlad points out, he's a 5-year-old boy. Just see, he's only 5, yet he knows everything. Why? Because he heard from Narada Muni. Even while he was in the womb of his mother, he was mastering Srimad Bhagavatam. That shows you there is no material impediment to bhakti progress. Whereas his mother, she also heard, but because she was in anxiety, where's my husband, when is he going to come back? She couldn't retain what Narada Muni said. So she had the favorable material situation, you would say, in that she had the human form of life, and she was an adult, and Narada Muni was right there, but she couldn't take advantage of it. Whereas Prahlad had the unfavorable material situation. He was in the womb, yet he focused completely. So that shows us our real opportunity for showing independence. How we use any situation for increasing our bhakti. That's what Krishna wants to see. That's the precursor to true love. Someone who will use any circumstance to increase their attraction for the beloved and to increase their service to the beloved. That is the beginning of true love. So let's drop this idea that as I get older, I'm going to know more. As I increase my experience with the material world, I'll be more realized. Often I speak to travelers, young persons travel, and they say like that, I just got to see the world because I'll open up my perspectives more. I'll become a better person by seeing how different cultures live. And I always tell them, look, for 40 years I've been on every continent in the world. I can tell you that people just do the same thing everywhere with different styles. And all of these persons look at me like, oh, really? No, we can't believe it. And their friends, of course, say, come on, let's go. Let's go fly off to Thailand and see what they do in Thailand. And let's go fly off here, there, everywhere. Let's go to London. It'll be different there. No material experience will let you see what the material energy is doing to you. But we are so puffed up, we are so proud, we make a big deal about material distinctions. Oh, Jill was such, she was so much better than Jay. But from the overall point of view, from the intelligent point of view, from the bird's eye view of material existence, so to speak, the variations are so minor. Because the flavor is the same. This is how you're trapped. The flavor is the same. It's hard for us to accept. You mean that if I'm on vacation at a 5-star hotel in Phuket or something like that, and my dining, my sense gratification, my sleeping has the same flavor as the lizard out there in the desert? Nah. It's impossible. It can't be like that. But Prahlad says, yes, it is. The circumstances are different. The trappings are different. The decorations are different. But the flavor is the same. No. Can't be. This is why we need Shastra. So that we don't see with our material eyes, but we see through the Shastra. Kunti Devi is offering her prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She's pointing out the contradictions. And in her second prayer, she explains how the illusory energy works. Maya jamani kakshanyam, agyanokshanam, avyayam. Navakshase, mudadrusha. The mudhas, the fools, they don't recognize you, Krishna. Just like a foolish person can't recognize an actor on the stage. The actor is assuming a different role, and so the person doesn't know who that is. Who's that really? Who's acting in that way? So Kunti Devi explains that Krishna is covered by a curtain of illusory energy. And therefore, although he's there and everything comes from him, you don't see him. You don't recognize him. But of course, Kunti Devi, she's talking right to Krishna. She's offering her prayers. She's in the role of Krishna's aunt. Krishna touches her feet, but she knows he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In her situation, she's about to experience the greatest loss. Krishna is about to leave Hastinapur and return to Dwarka. So Kunti Devi is offering her prayers, trying to underline the helplessness of the Pandavas without Krishna's presence. And she's considering, as you know, that the great disaster is not the war they just went through, all the terrorism that was inflicted upon them, on her sons and her, by Duryodhana and company. No, the real disaster is that Krishna is leaving. So here you see another contradiction. The famous verse, you well know. Let these calamities happen again and again. Who wants calamities in their life? Even some of you here, you would be a little afraid. Is that what bhakti's all about? Let the calamities happen again and again? But you have to understand what real love is. Kunti Devi is saying, the relationship with you, Krishna, the love, is so overpowering and inconceivable that I don't care about material calamities. Whether there are calamities or not is not important. Or, looked at another way, it seems, Krishna, that when there are calamities, you're around us all the time. So obviously then, calamities are our friend because you're with us. Therefore, I say, let there be more calamities, so you'll be with us. You never told anyone like that. Because we don't know what is real love. We don't know what is real love, and we're afraid of Krishna. Therefore, we need to repeatedly hear Srimad Bhagavatam so that we develop confidence in Krishna. We've been terrorized by material nature, yet we are attached to material nature. This is the great mystery. We've never been fulfilled by material nature, yet we're so attached to it, and we're a little cautious about Krishna. What's he going to do to us? You know what Kunti prayed for? Calamities. What do you think about that? But look at it from the love viewpoint. And in bhakti, the love viewpoint is the only viewpoint. It's the all-powerful, all-pervading viewpoint. But we're looking at the situation based on bodily attachment. Kunti Devi's praying for calamities. That's not good for the body. But she knows she's not the body. She knows she's part of Krishna. She knows she's Krishna's devotee. Indeed, she knows two things. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he's also my nephew. Yet, at the same time, she says, I'm just an unintelligent woman, what do I know? And her prayers, as we said, they contain all knowledge. These are the bhakti contradictions. She doesn't want Krishna to go. Therefore, she's pointing out to you, the real calamity is not birth, death, old age, disease. The real calamity is not the Kauravas, Duryodhana, whatever he did, whatever, Ashwatthama, all these guys. They're not the real calamity. The real calamity is Krishna leaving. She's focusing our attention on that point. In the process of her offering prayers, she mentions more contradictions about Krishna. She's training you up. She is teaching you about the Supreme Absolute Truth. She's pointing out the various contradictions and holding them up to you so you can relish them and also so you can understand. You see, Bhagavatam is rasa. It is spiritual rasa. It gives you relish. It gives you nectar. At the same time, it's knowledge. The knowledge is nectarian. Usually, knowledge means you're going to have to struggle to learn it. It's going to be dry. It's going to be an ordeal. But it'll help you to get more money or just things you have to know about this world. But Bhagavatam knowledge is saturated with sweetness. So Natan Goswami says that every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is saturated with Krishna brain. You may wonder sometimes about the chapters where just dynasties are described. This one married that one, gave birth to that one. You might flip through the pages real quick. Then you get to the end of the chapter and it says, anyone who reads these history of a dynasty gets such and such a benediction. They can go back. Bhagavatam is the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what are some of the other contradictions that Kunti Devi points out? She said, fear personified is afraid of you, Krishna, but you ran away in fear from Mother Yashoda. You were so frightened that tears were coming from your eyes, washing the black ointment around your eyes. That's how frightened you were. Yet fear is afraid of you. How could anyone understand this? In speaking about Yashoda Mai, Kunti Devi is showing that actually she has superior love than me. Yashoda Mai never knew Krishna's God. Even sometimes Krishna would do inconceivable things and she would just wonder, what's my boy up to? I don't understand this. Anyway, he's still my boy. Let me feed him. Whereas Kunti Devi knew this is Bhagavan. At the same time, she acted as his aunt. So she was able to handle both realities. Whereas Yashoda Mai, no, she was blinded by pure love. If I don't feed Krishna, he'll be hungry. If I don't wash him, he'll be dirty. So Kunti Devi is appreciating the pure Vrindavan love of Yashoda Mai. What other contradictions did Kunti Devi point out? Although you're unborn, still you appear to take birth. You're unborn and you're the vital force within everyone. Yet, you appear to take birth. Furthermore, you're inactive, yet you act. She's outlining the basic contradictions that Krishna talks about in Bhagavad Gita. I have nothing to do, yet still I do things. Upanishad statement, tasya karanam, karanam cha vidyate. He has nothing to do, yet he does things. He's the cause of so many things, yet he has nothing to do. He doesn't do anything. You would think this is, ordinarily you would think this is word juggling. But the Bhagavatam fills out the whole vision of the Supreme Personality of God. So you can understand this is not just some kind of witty talk. The unborn takes birth. The inactive acts. Some people say it's just like that. Buddhist, so-called Buddhist poem. The sound of one hand clapping in the bars. Nothing mystical about one hand clapping. So the Bhagavatam is giving you the flavor, the taste, and the knowledge of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So that therefore it's not just witty talk. The unborn takes birth, the inactive becomes active. Fear itself is afraid of him, yet he runs from all the observer. You get to see Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality God, in his unlimited fullness. Rasa Vaisa, you see him as the ocean of all flavors. Kunjadevi pointed out that he appears in the form of animals. Although, obviously, he's not an animal. Just like when he appears as Varaha to rescue the earth. He appears as, in his born incarnation. So how does he find the earth planet? By sniffing, just like a boar. Where's the earth planet? Just like a boar searching through the forest. So a fool would think, this is God? This is the supreme personality of God? He takes the form of a tortoise as Kurmadev, a fish, Matsyadev, boar, Varahadev. But Koti's pointing out, he takes that form, but those forms are not material. They're all spiritual satya under that. So it seems a contradiction indeed. He's appearing in all these animal forms, yet he is the supreme absolute truth. What other contradictions are Kunti going to have? His appearance. There's a lot of controversy about his appearance. Some people say he appeared just to glorify the pious kings in the line of King Yadu, especially Yudhisthira Maharaj. Some people say that was the point. Others say that he appeared because of Vasudeva and Devaki wanting him as their son. Still others say that he came because of the prayers of Brahma when the earth planet was overburdened. And the demigods approached Brahma for a solution. Others say that that's the reason why he came. Still even more, others say Bhaveshmin Kushamanana Avijja Kama Karma Bhi. Others say that he saw the struggling of the living entities in the material world, working hard. Just like in Sydney, everyone knows you got to work hard. You got to pay the price to be in the big city. You got to scramble, you got to squeeze, strain, stress. Pay those high rents and high housing prices. I think they're like number two or number three in the world. Number three. First is Hong Kong, then Vancouver, then Sydney. More expensive than London or New York. So, of course, we think, oh, how nice it is to be in Sydney. The weather is generally good. The surfing is nearby. The harbor. But you're paying for it. You're working so hard. What happened to the 40-hour work week?
Long gone.
At least minimum 50 hours these days. Or the boss is telling you, you go home when the job is done. I knew some young men who graduated with a degree in accounting, and they got a job. They got jobs with an accounting firm, big accounting firm. And so they had it in their minds, these boys, that, you know, yeah, we'll work a 40-hour week. We'll give it our all in all, 40 good hours, and then, hey, yeah, we're off to Bondi or whatever. So after a few weeks of that, their employers just called them in and said, hey, look, let's tell you the way it is. This 40-hour work week is mythology. You go home when the job is done. It's not about time. It's about the job being finished. You can call it quits when the job is done. Never mind whether that's 5 o'clock or 8 o'clock at night. This is the reality these days. Everyone's getting squeezed tighter and tighter. You don't want to lose your job. It could be hard getting another job. You're like a brand. What's your brand worth in the corporation? How are you being perceived? How's your brand, your personal brand, being perceived at the workplace? You've got to sell yourself. You've got to have your profile. It's called your brand, in case you don't know that. What's the value of your brand? You've got to keep adding value to your brand so that you're seen at the workplace to be valuable, better than others. You always have to watch your back. So, King Kunti Devi points out, Bhaveshman Krishamanana, this struggle. In the Bhava Sindhu, the ocean of becoming and unbecoming. The foam on top of the waves in that ocean, appearing and disappearing. You're struggling in that. Avijja Kama Kamavi. And what's powering that struggle? Ignorance. Of course, in this case of devotees, they're trying to live as simple as they can. That means, make sure your material endeavors do not threaten your spiritual life. That's the definition of simple living. If you can make billions of dollars and it doesn't threaten your spiritual life, go right ahead. But you have to be honest. It's not automatic that someone poor is living simply. Living simply means your endeavors in the material world should not deter your spiritual advancement, whether you've got billions of dollars or whether you just got a few hundred dollars. So, avijja, the nescience, is powering the fruit of activities. Avijja as well as kama, lust. The two go hand in hand. The more lust you are, the more ignorant you are. The more ignorant you are, the more lust you are. It's a deadly combination. Gradually you begin to understand that material endeavors are not innocent. My material endeavors, no matter how they're glorified by society, by your family, by your material friends, no matter how glorified material activities are, they're increasing your avijja, your ignorance, and your kama, your lust. Avijja, kama, kama, bi. So that deadly duo of ignorance and lust leads to more karma, the chain of action and reaction. So Kunti Devi, she's pointing that out. Remember the simple woman who doesn't know anything? She's showing how to be a genuine liberated woman. So, she says that because living enemies are struggling in this ocean of illusion, therefore, Krishna, you've appeared in order to rejuvenate the processes of bhakti. So Vishnuchakravarti Thakur says that's actually the real reason why Krishna came. Out of all the other reasons that Kunti Devi came, this one's the real one. As stated at the end of the ninth canto in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna knew that by acting in his leelas, he would give conditioned souls coming in the age of Kali something to remember and focus upon. And that way, they would be rescued from the struggles of material illusory existence. Krishna knew that. So that was a main reason why Krishna did his leelas. He has nothing to do. He doesn't need anything. But first of all, I'll just do it for my own pleasure. I already have everything. I don't need any reason. But I'll just do it just because I want to. That's freedom. Why? Why do I want to? Because I want to. And coincidentally, this will benefit the conditioned souls who will become mesmerized by my activities, and in that way they'll be saved from Kali Yuga. There's another contradiction dealt with extensively in Chaitanya Charitamrita. How it is that the infinite Supreme Absolute Truth comes under the control of his infinitesimal devotee? How is it that the complete whole comes under the control of a part? Think about that. This is the power of pure love. And this is what Krishna wants. He wants to become subordinate to his pure devotees. Therefore, he describes that all the official hymns of the Vedas do not give me as much pleasure as when my girlfriends chastise me for neglecting it. On the material plane, what man likes to be chastised by his wife or his girlfriend? The excruciating experience. But to bite your tongue, you know you can't say anything. Right, every married man knows that. You're never right. Just bite your tongue. Otherwise, you know, no prasad that night. But what does Krishna say? Swayambhava? He says, I relish the chastisements of my girlfriends much more than the official prayers of the Vedas. This is God. When his friends, his cowherd boyfriends, challenge him, you know, big man, let's wrestle. Krishna relishes that. Now, of course, when Mother Yashoda is chasing him with a stick, Krishna's crying, you know, from Damodarasa. He's shaking so much, his body's shaking so much, his pearl necklaces are shaking, tears are washing him, mascara from his eyes, he's breathing heavily. He's putting on a good show. He knows, I've got to impress my mother that I'm frightened, and then she'll put the stick down. And she's concerned, Krishna, why are you so fearful? Why? Put the stick down, we'll talk about it. Put the stick down. But if I put the stick down, will you promise you'll never do this again? I promise I'll never do it again. I'll never cause this mischief again. He's relishing such situations. This purport is also pointing out that you cannot understand Krishna through your mental and sensory powers. Do you really understand the full significance of that? In Western society, you're trained up to think that my mental faculties, my intellectual faculties, my senses are capable of benefiting you. And then you reach your bhavatam, you find out that your intellectual, mental faculties, your senses are causing you so much distress. They're blinding you. Material life means you accumulate pride as you change from one body to another. Pride in your body and mind. No matter what kind of body and mind you take, you feel proud of it. Lord Kapila Dev points this out in the third canto of Bhagavatam. Jantarbhaya bhava echasmin yam yam yonim anuvrajit. Lord Kapila Dev points out, the amazing thing about Maya is that no matter what body the jiva takes, the jiva feels at home in that body. Yes, this is me. This is natural. Not simply that I feel like a natural man or a natural woman. No, I feel like a natural fish. I feel like a natural chicken. That's the covering of Maya. It all feels like you're feeling home. So just think, how am I going to understand reality if I can't rely on my material mind and senses? In the translation, you hear that your unlimited glories are inconceivable to the conditioned souls. Many modern theologians argue about right and wrong without knowing what is actually right. Their arguments are always false and their judgments inconclusive, because they have no authorized evidence with which to gain knowledge of you. Because their minds are agitated by scriptures containing false conclusions, they are unable to understand the truth concerning you. Furthermore, because of polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusion, their theories are incapable of revealing you, who are transcendental to their material conceptions. You are one without a second, and therefore in you, contradictions like doing and not doing, happiness and distress are not contradictory. How is it that we are understanding Krishna a little bit? It is not because of our intellectual powers, our sensory powers. It is because we are hearing through parampara. The parampara system is like eyeglasses through which you can see. The eyeglasses do not change what you see. They just allow you to see better. So we need to understand this transcendental mechanism known as parampara. You know that story, you've heard it before, how one devotee in his pre-devotee days was very attached to information about Vedic aircraft, the Vimanas, and the yogic cities, the mystic powers, and Vedic so-called mysticism. So he actually asked Prabhupada, can you tell me about Vedic technology? Ready to hear all about the aircraft and all about traveling through different phases of time and the mystic powers, the Ashta city. Vedic technology, yes, please, Prabhupada, tell me. Prabhupada replied to the point. Vedic technology means parampara. So think of the parampara as an actual technological mechanism which allows you to understand. It's tough on our Western conditioning. How could it be that my understanding is dependent on a chain of persons that came before me? How can that be? I'm me. I've got a mind. I've got eyes. I've got ears. What's the problem? I've been to school. I've studied at the uni. What's the problem? What's this emphasis on this chain of disciples, spiritual masters? It must be just some kind of Hindu relic, you know? Hindu folklore. You have to understand through these persons, otherwise you never understand. I'm sectarian, doesn't it? So much of our advancement in bhakti is dependent on our understanding the value of parampara. Of course, Krishna himself says, evam parampara praptam evam rajase yogadu. This knowledge is coming through the chain of disciplic succession. And that's how the saintly kings understood it and applied it in their government. So Krishna is telling you, what I'm saying is actually for the governments of the world. It's not just a personal thing. It's actually information meant to guide society, to govern society. Otherwise, as Srila Prabhupada makes the point in his purport, how else will the government leaders protect their people from lust, anger, and greed without that parampara knowledge? So it's not just a personal thing. All right, you happen to believe in Krishna. Fine. Yeah, I believe in scuba diving. Rugby league.
Yeah, whatever.
Cricket.
Yeah, whatever. Have fun in your own kind of way, and that's what it's all about.
We need to understand the significance of parampara. We are getting knowledge in the descending process, avaroha panta. Let's think briefly now about the significance of that. Knowledge coming down. Let's try to see ourselves in our actual situation, that we're blind. And the only way we can see in the dark is if we hear sound vibration. Move this way, move that way. Is that how bats fly? They don't see, they just make a sound and they navigate based on the echoes off of cave walls. We're like that. We're like bats in the material world. We can only navigate by sound vibration. So it is crucial that we hear the right sound vibration. That is the parampara emphasis. Preserving the authentic sound so the bat can fly through material existence and get out. So let us consider what are the characteristics that make deductive knowledge, the parampara, knowledge coming down, just like an elevator. Avaroha panta. Avatars come down, knowledge also comes down. Just like an elevator. Avaroha. Avatar. So what are the distinctive characteristics? Therefore you can trust parampara knowledge. Because anyone can say, well, this is deductive knowledge. This knowledge I'm giving you is coming down. Let's look and see what the parampara looks like. Let's look and see how it operates. First of all, such a line passing down deductive knowledge, it should come from the Supreme Source. So demonstrate how your knowledge is coming from the Supreme Source. You see, if Krishna is just an ordinary person, Bhagavad-gita has no value. That's why so many mundane scholars work hard to present Krishna as an ordinary person. Because then they know, ha-ha, Bhagavad-gita is just an ordinary book, ha-ha. You can depend on us, we'll sort you out. It's like, you know, the first so-called Bhagavad-gita I tried to read during my university days. In the back, I was explaining last night at the Bhakti Virksha gathering. By a British person, he had his commentary in the back. And I just opened the book real quick and looked at the back, and there I read, Krishna is a concept meant to satisfy both the intellectuals and the sentimentalists. The foremost scholar has said this, therefore everyone should accept it. So you have to get rid of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead if you want to live material life. So therefore, as Prabhupada always point out, so many scholars make a good living off of Bhagavad Gita by trying to get rid of Krishna. That's actually their profession. Once you get rid of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what's the value of Bhagavad Gita? You're talking, Krishna's talking, she's talking, he's talking, everyone talks. Of course, they'll say, it's a nice literary composition. One of the world's literary classics. And it has some value in terms of guiding persons like Gandhi or others. It has some value in that way. But that Bhagavad Gita presents the Supreme Personality of God. To accept that means you have to change your whole worldview. So is that blind faith to change your worldview and accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God? No. Bhagavad Gita educates you in the science of the Supreme. People are afraid of blind following, especially these days. No matter where you're from, Australia, India, everyone is afraid of being a true believer, a blind follower. Everyone's hung up on that point. Oh, I don't want to be like the Taliban or something. Or I don't want to be like an Orthodox Catholic or an Evangelical Christian. Fanatical Muslim, oh, no way. Once you understand how reasonable Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are, then you'll be more peaceful. If you're going to compare systems of knowledge, you have to look for certain things. Does this system of knowledge originate from the Supreme? If it doesn't, it's just ordinary knowledge. Does the system present a way to verify what it says? Maybe you won't master it all overnight, but are there procedures presented that gradually in the future you'll be able to verify what the system is saying? And what are the quality of persons that make up that system? Are they exemplary? Western knowledge, as we always point out, is based on the fact that your personal behavior has nothing to do with the knowledge you're conveying. University professors are adamant about that point because they don't want you to be questioning their behavior. Yet they're brilliant. Nobel Prize winners. What does personal behavior have to do with the knowledge that I'm giving you? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's a brilliant teacher who's telling very fascinating human knowledge. But the bhakti yogi looks at the behavior. Why? Because if your behavior is illusory, it's saturated with illusory energy, that is, what kind of knowledge are you going to be able to present? Yes, you can tell us knowledge of ordinary technology. But you see, from the Vedic point of view, that knowledge of ordinary technology is childish. So yes, we'll rely on ordinary knowledge to help us decide, should I buy an iPhone or should I buy a Samsung Galaxy? Who's suing who over what? Okay, we give them credit for that, you understand? We're not against Western technology. We give credit where credit's due. But we just don't think it's very important, that's all. So yes, devotees will be able to buy an iPhone or they'll buy a Samsung Galaxy, whatever. We don't make a big deal out of it. Oh, how? My life is so much better because I have this iPhone. What? What's that you say? Galaxy is cheaper?
Really?
We just do the necessary. So we do give credit to Western society. You devise wonderful technologies that are destroying the earth. Congratulations. You have no idea what to do with all the plastic and synthetics that you're manufacturing. You're implying that there's some kind of mystic yoga power, some city yoga perfection, that you produce plastics and synthetics, and then when you decide to throw them away, they just disappear from the world. Plastic just disappears. You know, you put it in the rubbish bin, they're plastic junk, and it's gone from the universe, right? So anyway, we do give some credit for partial success, but partial success is not good enough. Partial success means, look, we've manufactured this sophisticated laptop, smartphone, whatever. Okay, very, very, very good. We'll use it in Krishna service. But it's only partial success because you don't know what to do when the thing breaks down. Where do all the materials go? How does the air, the atmosphere absorb all these synthetics?
Well, we're working on it, don't worry.
We are worried. So all you're seeing is partial success. So we give some credit. We're not fanatics. Well done, you made a smartphone. You have no idea what to do when you dispose of it, but still, we'll give you credit. Yet, the real issue is, what is the self? What is the supreme source? What is the energy? Where does the energy come from? Those questions, where do you find the answers? You can't get it from the Western system of knowledge. The information you need is beyond the range of your senses, as Kunti Devi pointed out. Alaksham Sagavutana Antir Vayakasam. Although you're within and without Krishna, you're invisible to the conditioned soul. He's not invisible to her. She's talking right to him. Krishna offered his respects to his aunt. He bowed down at her feet, touched her feet. He's the Supreme Personality of God. So, when you're evaluating deductive forms of knowledge, first you look for, does this knowledge originate from the Supreme? Secondly, you look for that knowledge giving you procedures to verify it, so you're not just a true believer. It takes a little bit of faith just to walk into the laboratory, but after that, you should be having procedures to verify what you're hearing. Thirdly, what are the qualities of persons who make up that parampara, that chain? Are they just ordinary Joes? Or are they extraordinary personalities? Fourthly, there should be some system in that parampara for guaranteeing the accuracy of transmission of knowledge. Because even in the best system, there can be some wobbles, you know? Krishna doesn't cover up. He says that in Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes there's some problems. Sakalinaha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. Krishna says, sometimes, in the course of time, the real meaning of Bhagavad Gita becomes lost. That doesn't mean the verses become lost. It means the precise purport, the clarity of understanding, becomes lost. So Krishna says, he comes again and again to shore up the clear understanding. So there you see the parampara in action, guaranteeing its own purity of knowledge that's transmitted. Krishna comes, he sends his devotees. So these are just a few of the ways that you can verify the significance of the parampara. And you have to become comfortable with that because Everything about Krishna is beyond the range of the senses. Without this knowledge of Bhagavatam, what are you going to do? You can sing a song, which is a nice song, like I was taught in Sunday school when I was a little boy. Who made the mountains? Who made the seas? Somebody bigger than you or me. That's nice. But it's not very deep. It's like spiritual nursery school. Telling a little 3-year-old child, your daddy is bigger than you. And the child goes, ooh, how big? Oh, he's just bigger. Our distribution of transcendental knowledge is so dependent on parampara. Therefore, we're especially very happy to hear how the North City book distributors are making history by putting all the youthful energies into the distribution of this parampara knowledge. And miraculous results are happening. It's an historic time, I told them on Wednesday night. Making history. The whole world of bhakti yogis and the ISKCON Society is wondering, what is going on in Sydney? There's so many books in Sydney. We thought that was sticker loca. Bucket loca. I've looked throughout Prabhupada's letters, I've looked throughout Prabhupada's books, I could never find a statement, just distribute my stickers. Just hold a bucket. Maybe you can find it. I haven't found it. So now, this distribution of parampara knowledge has become miraculous. So therefore, the whole atmosphere of the temple becomes electrified from the spiritual platform. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.